Hello and welcome to We're All Gonna Die and Other Fun Facts, a semi-regular, occasionally amusing, and rarely funny series of conversations on a random topic. This episode is entitled, for some reason, I wouldn't trust anyone in Oasis to water my plants if I was out of town. But what it's really about is the mental process of writing and performing music, and we have a guest who knows a little something about that. His name is Adam Rousseau. He's the guitar player for the local band Triggers, who I love to death. He's also the bass player for the lovely electro side project to Triggers, Chrome Baby Jesus. And thank you for being on the show, Adam.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yes, and so you are a musician. You've been a musician for a long time. So basically, your entire life is just dealing with your drug problem and your many STDs. Is that? I mean, how much of your spare time does that take up?
Ooh, that's pretty much the main focus of every day is just getting through that. And occasionally, I can play guitar.
Oh, that's
that's
pretty funny. Oh, you see, most people don't take that question straight. all right, so. So as you know, we're in my house, and I have many miles of vinyl and CDs and stuff in here. And so I'm someone who really doesn't play music, but I'm sort of fascinated by music.
You have a bass right there.
I have a bass,
and it's strung left-handed.
Yes, I'm left-handed bass player. Yeah, but I can't actually play bass. Like I can't. Like I can maybe I can get through a couple bars of Mary Had a Little Lamb, but I'm kind of. Fucked after that. I mean,
I don't think I've ever heard that played on a bass before.
It's in one of the books I bought to try to teach myself. It didn't go well. but I always, you know, I think sometimes, like, music, sometimes, I think for people who don't play like me and most of the rest of the world, sometimes it is kind of this mystical process. Like, all creative processes are somehow like, where does it come from, man? You know, or I remember once hearing Tom Petty say that, you know, God wrote all the songs. We just have to pick them up on our mental radios. And like, so that's what I want to talk about is this kind of like, where do songs come from? I mean, is it like, you know, mommy chords and daddy chords that love each other very much? Or, I mean, how does that work?
Well, that's funny that you mentioned that because I feel like a lot of musicians, I've read and heard a lot of people say things like that. And even Brett and I have kind of talked, Brett's the other guy in Triggers and CBJ, and it's like, yeah, it's like these things already exist, like the music's there, and it's just, it kind of just sometimes you just like pick them out, you know. And Keith Richards, I don't know if you read his latest book or his only book, I guess, and he talks a lot about that. Like it's not really about you coming up with this thing, but rather just kind of finding it and like channeling it. So I don't know. Which makes it, I don't know, more interesting to me anyway.
Yeah.
You know, you're just like a conductor.
Yeah. I think also is it a part of, and I know as someone who, yeah, struggles to get through a few bars of Mary Had a Little Lamb or whatever on his bass, which I see is sitting precariously in the holder or in the stand. You know, this process of, you know, again, when you see people on stage, or you see really good bands on stage, like your bands, it looks kind of effortless. And so how much of the process is just, well, can I stretch my finger far enough to play that fucking chord, or...
I think it's a lot harder than it looks. And that's why we have shows and we're, like, hypercritical of ourselves pretty much all the time. You know, like, the last show we had at Brillo Box, you know, Woody, our drummer, and I specifically were kind of like, man, there was a lot of stuff there that was just no good. And like, you always know when you fuck up.
Yeah.
You know, like, you botch something or, you know, just totally, your mind just goes blank and you forget how the song goes, you know.
Jeez,
which doesn't happen a lot, but occasionally, you know, just get, like, a total moment of panic and just forget what the hell you're doing. But for some reason that doesn't seem to come across that well, because like everybody else at the show is like, oh, it was great, and so I don't know if they're either
listening. At that show,
yeah,
it was,
yeah,
great. I think one of the things too, and I noticed this even talking with Brett, how I think that the trained musician's ear picks up things that other people don't get. I remember when I had my old stereo that had like sliders, you know, all the graphic equalizers were sliders, and we were listening to something, and it wasn't anything I detected, but it really bugged the shit out of him. And he's like, "I'm sorry, can I adjust this? this is really bothering me." And I'm like, "Yeah, sure, whatever. It's, you know." And he removed like three of them an eighth of an inch or just like little minuscule, and it sounded infinitely better.
Yeah.
And I never...
But you had no idea.
I had no idea, and I never moved it from there. Or he realized, oh, your right speakers are in your left channel. Like the plugs are... It says right, but you're actually the left channel is coming out of the right speakers.
How did he know that? Did he know the record that was playing and,
yeah,
and how it was mixed, I guess?
Yeah. Then? Yeah, yeah. It actually might have been some of your demos, or maybe the rough mix of Forcing a Smile, I think it might have been. Because he played it for me, and he was like, I gotta fix this. And it was just like, oh. And he's like, oh, and by the way, do you realize this is backwards? And I was just, no clue.
Yeah.
No clue. You know, just that level, though, I think of... And you get into something like, you know, people who work with Pro Tools, or even my little dabblings with Audacity, there's like... Oh, that's an eighth of a second too soon that's happening.
Yeah.
And, yeah, I mean, most people aren't, you know, I at least I don't notice much.
I mean, it's funny because even, there's not like a dividing line between musicians and non-musicians, because there's lines between even musicians themselves. Like, you know, for instance, with us, like when we go to record something and we sit back, we listen to it, and Woody's ears are so like, sensitive to... I can't understand how he hears things, because like I'll hear a song that we do and like think it's like totally, you know, everything's in the right place, but he goes in and he edits things so that it's so perfect, like he can hear the difference between something being completely on or being a little bit behind, a little bit ahead, and that always just blows my mind. I mean, it's so, I don't know, I guess it just kind of is from person to person, and
wow,
it's not necessarily between people that play music and people that don't play music, because even amongst our own band, there's a huge spectrum of, you know, tolerance, I guess, for imperfection.
Wow. Which then actually brings me to the next thing, you know, because a couple weeks ago, actually when I was getting the outro music for this podcast from Brett, I kind of sat, I was, you know, a fly on the wall during one of your rehearsals. Which I'd say was a weird process.
Oh, yeah, I remember that.
Because you guys would play a song, and I'm like, do I clap, or do I just sit here and pretend to be invisible? Like, I don't want to be in the way, you know. They already gave me a free beer, and I'm sitting here, and I'm asking them to do things. I don't want to intrude. But should I applaud? What do I do, you know? And you had come up with a new song.
Oh, yeah, I remember what we were working on there. Yeah, we haven't really gone any further with that, unfortunately, yet. But, yeah, that was kind of the first time.
Which was actually a really cool thing for an outsider to see. Like, ooh, this is a song being birthed into the world. Which is kind of a weird process. And I always wondered about, like, what it means to be in a band. And you've had, of course, other band experiences that were maybe less positive. Where you kind of have an idea, and then you have to trust other people to make it a whole song or to flesh it out. And, like, what's that like? I mean, when you come up with a riff, or you kind of have, I mean, the thing that I witnessed is you had parts, you had lyrics, you had stuff, and it was just sort of like, this is what I got so far.
Yeah.
And then it was like, okay, this is what I have. These are some pieces.
Yeah. I mean, it's nerve-wracking. It's kind of scary, you know, it's like being like naked in front of someone, like, well, what do you think? You know?
Yeah,
but I don't know, because especially if like you're really super into an idea and it doesn't sort of fly, you're kind of like and then on the other side of that, sometimes you'll have something that was just kind of an afterthought and people pick up on it like really immediately.
But well, that's interesting, because I know like sometimes for me, even this podcast or things that I've written creatively or things I've written academically or when I acted, there would be things where I'd be like, oh, God, that sucked. Or, you know, or people would respond to the things that I didn't like that I would do, like, oh yeah, that's a poem I wrote, and oh my god, and you know, I mean, that would be the one that won the award, the creative writing contest, when it was like the one that was really mine.
Yeah.
And so I guess then that happens within a creative unit.
Yeah. No, that definitely happens. And I mean, most of the time, like, the ideas we come up with, like, we're all kind of willing to work on and try to at least get it to a point where we know if it's working or not, you know. And there aren't very many ideas that kind of get shut down, like, right from the get-go, which is good, you know, which is you know, I haven't been in too many different bands, but so I don't really know, like, the sort of dynamics.
Yeah, because that was one of the things.
How other bands work. I'm always fascinated to talk with people in other bands and see how they write and how.
Oh, wow.
Things
I mean,
happen. Because it is very different from.
It's very different, and I'm sure it's very private, but you see. I mean, it's got to be like intercourse for married people. Like, you know they're doing it, but how?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah. It's just like, is this normal?
Yeah. These kids got here somewhere, but I. Yeah, somehow, but I have no idea how that happened.
See, yeah, unless it was some sort of immaculate conception. That, so you know they're doing it, but how? What's it like for them? You know, is it sort of that kind of public-private kind of thing? Because I will say, that's the other thing, being the fly on the wall, and you guys seem to get along really well, and we're really respectful of each other's ideas and the process, and there was a lot of, is this okay? But I said to somebody afterwards, I was like, you know, I could see why bands come to hate each other. Why something, and it is maybe that seeing everyone naked and going, no, you know, that kind of intimacy can turn into a really bad divorce.
Yeah, well, it's tricky because I don't know. I mean, that's almost a whole separate thing to get into.
Yeah, but,
you know, because you're it is like sort of like being married to like three different people. You know,
yeah.
And so, you know, you're friends first of all, and then you're trying to work together on something creative, and you know, to try to get like four different people that see the world like very differently to agree on things is sometimes a challenge, but. You know, the flip side of that is you can do something way cooler than you could on your own.
That's true. Though, bad parallel, but I remember, I think it was the VH1 Behind the Music or something about the Police.
Oh,
and how much they hate each other.
Yeah.
And they were saying, I think it was at Sting's wedding, they just got together and was like, okay, come on, we'll just play a couple songs. And Sting was saying by the third song, he was already all the old antagonisms, and he was already getting pissed at everybody else for the way they were playing.
Yeah.
And just like, oh, that's, so that's got to be a weird thing. And I know, too, with Triggers, I think Brett told me, you guys also, if you write the song, you have veto power over it, too? Is that true? Like, you get to... And the reason why I'm asking that is because I think to this day, Danelle's favorite Trigger song is Eyes Like a Ninja. Which
really?
I believe you wrote, and then you were like, no.
Oh my god, I hate that song.
And you wrote it.
Yeah, for the most part, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I guess veto power, like, is that in terms of what everybody else is doing in the song? Is that kind of...
Or I just that no, this is as far as this song goes. We got it. It was released on Elude the Suits. Didn't make it to Smoke Show. It's the one song in there, I think, that didn't make it to Smoke Show, right?
Yeah, we recorded it, too. I actually have the... somewhere. Yeah, that was recorded and mixed, and it was just cut.
It
just didn't fit. And that's really funny, because one of my friends from home that I'm pretty sure doesn't like any of my music loves that song.
Really?
And he's always like, he's like, wow, why don't you guys play that? Or why isn't that on whatever record? I don't know. It's so funny.
Well, that's a weird thing, too. Yeah, friends and... I remember in Souvenir of Canada, there's this great part where Douglas Copeland, he's, you know, it's this whole thing Douglas Copeland, the Canadian author, did about what it means to be Canadian and are there uniquely Canadian experiences, and he goes through all this stuff that's like North American culture, but only to the North, you know. And there's this great scene where he's talking with his dad, and he's like, oh, and that's just like that scene in Girlfriend in a Coma. And Douglas Copeland goes, wait, you read that? And his dad goes, yeah, you give them to us. I read all your books. And he's like, oh my god, I don't even want to hear that. Oh, just stop talking. And it is this, and then they cut to his mom saying that, you know, she's like reading or like listening to or reading his books is like a violation of privacy. And she like kind of doesn't want to read it. So is that a weird thing too? Because here, I mean, Triggers are a Pittsburgh band and very grounded in this community. And,
yeah.
You know, friends come to shows, you know. Is that a weird thing too? And it's also not only is it, you know, being naked in front of people like the other three guys in the band, yeah. But then all of a sudden it's like, well, we got a new CD out, you know, did you like one? You know, or,
yeah.
or we're going to play a show, you're going to show up. You know, how does that like even work too? That kind of vulnerability or that kind of intimacy? I mean, you know, I've never been to an arena concert. Do you know that?
Really?
Yeah, I've never been to, like, a console.
What about, like, amphitheater? Like, you've been to, like what is the, now, what's...
When Burgistown? No, yeah. I've never done the big-ass concert experience.
Really? Never?
Never.
Not once.
There was never usually anything I want to see, and, well, I mean, yeah, there was Black Keys and Flaming Lips either happened or is happening.
Yeah, I have no idea, actually.
Yeah, it's part of me, like, I kind of like those bands, but I don't know if I'm ready for being one of the multitudes. So yeah. There's this great intimacy of going to a place like Howlers or Brillo Box or whatever, yeah. And seeing Thunderbird Cafe and seeing live music and, you know, being able to make eye contact. But again, is that weird when it's like, you know, these people or you're giving, you know, CDs to siblings and parents and shit? Is that also part of the like, oh, this is what I do and, you know, the bathroom door's locked kind of thing, you know, kind of that feeling?
Yeah, or? I don't know. I mean, with friends, it's pretty... Because, I mean, you know, our friends are great, and they come to all our shows, so we're kind of used to it at this point, you know? Mm. So it's you know, kind of just like this big, I don't know, family in a sense. But with my actual family members, I always feel a little bit more kind of hesitant to show them stuff, because it's, you know, because yeah. Especially, I don't know, showing your parents, like, well, this is what I did, you know? You raised me, and this is what I did with it, you know? This is the best that I have to show for it, is this record of songs that, you know, I don't know what you're going to read into these lyrics. I don't even know what I think of them, so...
Mm.
I don't know, but...
Yeah, so I guess that's the other thing. So have you ever gotten this sort of, like... Okay, because I've misinterpreted some of your songs.
Like, how do you know
badly.
That?
Like, well, because, okay... Off of Smoke Show, it's from talking to Brett, but off of Smoke Show, the song Lewis's Party.
Oh, yeah.
That has that great, you know, was that you in the back room? We need to talk about it.
Yeah.
Like, thing. I was like, oh, fuck, man, that must have been like this, like, scathing, like, something happened at a party, and there was a love triangle thing, and no, that song's about fucking Ghostbusters. You know, and I was just like, I thought that was the most serious song on that record.
Yeah.
And it was about fucking Ghostbusters.
Well, that's... No, that kind of sucks that he told you that, because it's did it change the whole song for you?
Did
it ruin it for you?
No, it didn't ruin it for me at all. I mean, I still, you know, I still can listen to Smoke Show.
Yeah.
I mean, I like Forcing a Smile a lot better, but, you know, and it kind of like, you know, replaced, you know, it's like, oh, no, The New Child's my favorite, or,
yeah,
you know, something like that. I really like the new songs that you guys are working on, or the bits and bobs I've heard, but, you know. So it didn't like, that song sucks now. No, I mean, it's still, you know, the iPod shuffles on over to it. I'm not skipping it. It doesn't diminish the experience or the mystery of it for me.
Yeah.
You know. But have you ever had anybody who really, like, came, Adam, is that song about me? Is that about us?
No,
any of that kind of stuff?
Actually, I don't think that's ever happened, really.
Yeah. Did I just put a worry or a neurosis in your mind that wasn't there?
No, I'm just trying to remember if that's ever been the case. But
because no. I always think about I'm a huge fan of Bob Mould. I mean, I have every Bob Mould record. And
he was in Husker Du
and Sugar and all these solo records, and there's usually the thing that he brings to the breakup song is. His angle on the breakup song is he's the one doing the dumping. The heartbreak, usually, of the person who's dumping the person.
The dumper.
On Black Sheets of Rain, there's a song called Tonight's the Last Night That I'm Coming Home to You. And it's just devastating. Wow. And I always wonder what it would be like to be in a relationship with him. You know, they're working on the record. Oh, I wrote this new song called Tonight's the Last Night I'm Coming Home to You. Yeah. And then the record comes out and you live with that person. You know? Like, that's got to be a weird dynamic. Or, you know, Taylor Swift's next boyfriend. To know that, you know, I'm going to be the next album. You know, what an asshole I am is going to be the next fucking record. But nobody's ever like, is that about us? Is that about our relationship?
No, actually.
Oh, that's
good. Which now I kind of feel a little bit sad that no one's ever asked me that.
Oh.
No, I'm kidding.
Well, same about that. I mean, sad. I mean, so you talk about like the hometown audience. And of course, you guys have toured. I mean, you guys have played across the country and have at least done kind of shows, day trips, New York, Jamestown, New York, Cleveland. I mean, what is it like? You know, yeah, Brillo Box is a really, I hope, warm and exciting environment, inviting environment as a performer. But when you guys are somewhere else, I mean, how is that process maybe different when maybe, unless they came with you in the van, you don't know anybody there? Or it might just be the other bands that you played with here.
Yeah.
You know, who then returned the favor of getting you a show there.
It's, and this is a shame because we don't really play out of town very much anymore because it's just gotten to be kind of difficult and just, you know, it's financially it's just doesn't make any sense. But
yeah,
it's a whole different thing. It's in a way it's a lot more exciting and there's a lot and there's more pressure and less pressure because when you're out of town, like you don't have to worry about are we bringing out a ton of people tonight? And even if nobody's there, even if there's like five people there, you're still playing for five totally new people. So you get kind of like this added boost to sort of just like, you know, really kill it, you know. That's why we like going up to Jamestown and playing up there, and hopefully we'll go up there sometime soon. But you know, usually like we've had shows there where there have been a lot of people and shows where there's nobody there, and they're always like kind of equally fun because you just, I don't know, you kind of have a little bit of a chip on your shoulder when you come in, like you're like, all right, like let's
kick these people's asses.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe that's not quite the right analogy, but...
Well, no. It's funny just that, you know, because I... okay, so the last two concert experiences I had, I went a couple weeks ago, I went to Cleveland to see Anthrax, Exodus, and Municipal Waste.
Wow.
Yeah, it was with a friend of mine who...
And like, that wasn't in an arena type, but like what the
That
hell?
Was in the House of Blues in Cleveland. Oh, so that was in kind of a bigger room.
Yeah.
And there was even like, there were two other bands on the venue I didn't even get to, Shadows Fall and Holy Grail or something. And I had heard of four of the five bands. I mean, it was like 6 hours of metal, you know?
Yeah.
And then before that, I saw Grizzly Bear. You know, which is, that's like two ends of the musical spectrum.
Were you at the Grizzly Bear show?
In Oakland, yeah. Yeah. And I found it was interesting, like, the thing that I forgot being indie or whatever it is for so long and, you know, straying from my metal roots or whatever, is that, like, watching Grizzly Bear, and I love Grizzly Bear, and I keep thinking about that show, just seeing how those human beings make all that sound was just mystifying to me.
Yeah.
Oh, the bass player's playing clarinet now. Oh, yeah. That's how that comes in that song. And anticipating all the moves, and that was just so mystifying. But it was almost like they were wanted to apologize to us for breathing all the air. Like, we don't mean to use all your air, or at least our allotment of air. Okay, I'm sorry. You know, hopefully you don't hate us for this. You know, whereas the metal bands have this bombast of like, all right, we're going to kick your fucking ass and you're all going to have a great time. I want to see a circle pit. And I was just like, and in a weird way, that was a little refreshing. To see, like, no, we want to fuck you up, and there should be a circle pit, and oh my god, there was this guy in his 60s there who was totally dominating the circle pit.
Wow,
it was just insane. Like, this guy was just totally he never stopped. And like the lead singer of Exodus was like, "Don't fucking die in there, man! You're awesome!" And he made sure that guy got his copy of the set list after the show. Like he called, like they were done with their set. He called that guy up to the front of the stage to hand him a souvenir.
Yeah,
which is a different.
It would be really interesting if Grizzly Bear took that approach with their stage banter while still playing their type of music.
Yes. Yeah. Come on, everybody.
Yeah, we're gonna fuck you up. All right. Let's do the four-part harmony.
Which then, I will say, though, I know you're saying there's no, split between musician and non-musician, but I still believe in it a little bit. And so...
Well, I mean, it's like that with anything, Yeah. I can't understand how people can... how someone could write a novel. Like, that's... Yeah. That just blows my mind. You know?
Yeah.
I can barely compose, like, an email to send out about band practice, Yeah. And someone can sit down and write a 400-page...
Yeah.
So... piece of work.
Are there other musicians, other artists, maybe people who aren't outside the, like, immediate circle, who do kind of mystify you? Or, like, you just look at them and go, how the fuck do they come up with that? Where does that come from, that it does have that kind of romantic idealist, this liminal figure who can get in touch with the other side kind of, like, thing where you just go, how do they do that? Like, I do the same, you do the same thing,
yeah,
pretty much, but it's like, how do they do that?
Yeah. No, there's a lot of bands like that, a lot of musicians, and, Brett and I always talk about specifically, like, there's bands where we don't understand how they wrote certain songs or how they write their songs, because they don't seem like, it's not like this guy came in with these chords and sang the song and then they just built it from there. If you look at a band like Women, have you ever listened to Women?
I have not.
I think you'd be into them. They're
okay.
I don't know if they're still playing anymore because one of the guys died.
Oh,
which was pretty sad. But I don't know, it's just like really ambient, and it's not, they just play like all these kind of weird interlocking guitar lines, and I don't understand like what was the beginning point to that, Like, what do they start with? Do they start with a melody? Yeah. And so there's always a lot of mystery, I think,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, because I guess music,
if you're a musician.
Yeah, because I guess like bluesy, bass, straightforward rock and roll, you could say, oh, there was probably a riff.
Yeah.
Dun 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 dun.
Yeah.
Yeah. Probably somebody came up with the dun 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 part.
Yeah.
And then you throw in the harmonica solo in the right spot.
Yeah.
And you just know. Or there's stuff that's what was one of my friends said, like the IKEA table approach, like bands that are totally not original or artists that are not original. They just take like somebody's aesthetic.
Yeah.
And it's like building an IKEA table.
Yeah.
You know.
They just...
That's the synth part. That's where the solo goes, or what I call sometimes X music, where there's like X music is, it's stuff that's played on the radio stations called the X.
Oh yeah.
But
yeah.
And then there's always that one part where there's like the dun 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 dun, and then there's that breakdown where then suddenly it goes to the, and I will always love you. Like every single one of those songs.
That was gorgeous, by the way.
Thank you.
I'm glad that's recorded.
Yes. Oh God. And look. And even I'm looking at the printout or readout, and it's all red. It's all red. It's like you clipped that shit. Where every song has to have that part, or it won't get on the X.
Yeah.
That shit. Like that. Just oh God. That offends me and makes me angry, and I want to rip parking meters out of the ground whenever I hear that kind of stuff, But yeah, so that's I think is that about it? I think if we kick this topic around enough, are we ready for the bottom five?
Sure, man. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So it's now time for the bottom five.
So the bottom five aren't related to the.
There are a series of questions not related to our main topic that are of a surrealistic and or philosophical nature.
Mm.
Are you ready?
All right.
Are you ready? All right. If reincarnation is real, and you had to come back as an infectious disease or illness, what kind of disease would you be? The Buddhists or whatever, they got it right, or is it the Hindus that believe in reincarnation? One of those. They believe in reincarnation. God, that just sounded really stupid and that's recorded. The reincarnated
both
people.
Sort of similar.
Or Shirley MacLaine. Yeah, or yeah. Shirley MacLaine is right, and you have to come back as something. And say you kind of like fucked up this life. And so you have to go single cell organism.
Yeah.
Like, and say that was your fate. Like, what would you want to come back as far as if you had to come back as a disease?
I don't know. That's interesting because sometimes I think human beings are more of a disease than.
Yeah. Than well, humans. Yeah, we have our moments.
But if I had to be a disease, geez, wow, that's. I think I'd probably want to be just like the common cold disease, you know, because it's incurable, but it's really not that bad.
Incurable, just, promiscuous.
Yeah.
And won't kill you. Yeah. I like that. Yeah, that works.
You know.
All right. Question two. What is the strangest injury you have ever suffered?
Strangest injury I've ever suffered.
Strangest injury. Strangest way you've ever hurt yourself or been hurt. Weirdest accident.
I don't know if I want to say some of these. Actually, I haven't injured myself too often, actually. Luckily. I shouldn't say that. I'll probably get in a car wreck on the ride home now.
Yeah.
One night I came home and I was really, I'd just like gone through like a breakup or something, and I was pretty drunk. And I went to shut my door or something, and I like kicked it. Ooh, and I just kicked the mic.
That's all right. That would be an interesting sound effect. Yeah. Actually, and you did it right on cue, too. Yeah. So it's like we are going This American Life, where we have now sound effects and theme music. And,
oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That'll be next for you.
Yeah.
And I just, I hit the door the right way, and I just got this huge gash
in
my leg. And then it got infected.
Oh!
I didn't do anything with it for like 2 weeks, and it was just disgusting. And of course, me being like a total hypochondriac, I was like freaking out. I was like, "Oh my god, I'm about to have my leg amputated!" Instead of just going and getting it looked at, I sit around and freak out about it until the last possible moment.
Oh, Jesus!
And finally, I went to the doctor. I went to like some. Actually, I was home for Christmas, and my parents were like, "Just go to the fucking like walk-in clinic or whatever." And they're like, "Yeah, that's infected. Go get some antibiotics. You'll be fine." So.
That's good. So it wasn't gangrenous. Yeah.
No, it wasn't that point, but it was pretty gnarly.
That's good. All right. Question three. What is your most irrational pet peeve?
Irrational pet peeve.
Thing that just sends you to total red line anger that maybe it shouldn't or most people don't care about or...
I think... I don't know if this is irrational or not, but the one that comes immediately to mind is when people misuse the word ignorant for some reason.
Oh, which is such a Pittsburgh thing.
It's a Pittsburgh thing, or like a Midwest thing or something, and it just drives me nuts. Because they're ignorant of the word ignorant.
That is a level of irony that it's kind of hard to deal with or wrap your head around. Yeah.
Yeah, and I haven't heard it in a long time, which has been good, but that just
I heard it just last
boils
week.
My blood when I hear that.
Ignorant. Ooh. That's a good one. Mine is, and I've said this before and now people have given me shit about it, or somebody called me on the phone. People who juxtapose scratch and itch. People will say, and this might be a more New Jersey thing, I had an itch so I scratched. All right, I had a scratch so I itched it. Meaning that they were physically feeling like that need to scratch, but the scratch is the feeling, and the itch is the act of the verb. Itch becomes then a verb to itch it.
I don't think I've ever heard anyone
You've
do
never
that.
Heard. I think that's a New Jersey thing, because I grew up with that a lot. A lot of people did that, and for whatever reason, it just my mind, and I'm saying this again, it goes immediately to, I'll kill you and your whole fucking family. You know, like, that's just where I go immediately with that.
Huh. Well, that's...
There's no talking people down from that for me. Or talking myself down from that, I guess.
Now that I think about it, well, it was something similar. I had this really bad case of pink eye last, like, August.
Oh!
Dude, I don't know what the hell happened, but
because that's like a second grade degree.
Yeah, it was disgusting.
Oh,
and I went to the eye doctor, like, three times. And I remember them asking me, they're like, well, is your eye itchy or scratchy? And I'm thinking, what's the difference? Like, how can it be scratchy? Like, I already told you it was itchy, but what... How can something feel scratchy? So, I don't know. I guess that's sort of a similar thing.
It's maybe. Sort of the similar thing. Or maybe they're used to it or whatever, you know. Oh, God. I mean, that's another one where the process is mystified. I mean, you think doctors and car mechanics probably have to deal with people all the time. Or I have that awful moment whenever I go into the hardware store sometimes. I know exactly what I want.
Yeah.
But then when that person asks me, I'm just like, well, you know those things... that people use for stuff, I need one of those. It's like the thing that's... I immediately become a fucking idiot. Like, I don't... Even if I sometimes know the name...
Yeah.
I need a flange.
Yeah.
I don't say I need a flange. Okay, you know how when you have, like, a pipe that comes out of the wall, there's that round thing that goes out of the pipe so it looks better? I need a flange. Do you have any flanges? I can't do that to the guy at the hardware store. So, yeah. And I'm sure there's doctors and car. I mean, when I go to the car, I was like, yeah, it stopped. Which is, you know, that describes every single breakdown scenario that it just stopped working, man.
Yeah, I know. But I'll usually try to, like, pretend like I know what's going on and, like, throw out some sort of theory that I got from somebody else. Like, oh, yeah, well, I think it's this, but... I don't clearly have no idea.
Yeah, and I think that actually is probably worse.
Yeah.
Like, probably sometimes when I try to diagnose the car, it's like something completely different. Yeah.
It's usually like wishful thinking, too. It's like what you hope is wrong with it.
Yes. Which I'm sure, yeah, for medical, you know, that's always, you know, that is cancer. You know, like, it's like... Of course, the one time I had that, I had a sweat gland. I guess this happens when you get old. I had a sweat gland that just kind of was like, yeah, no, I'm done. And so I'm just going to be this random bump in the middle of your chest. It's still there.
Oh, really?
And so I went to the doctor and I was like...
So it doesn't sweat anymore? It just became a...
Just this thing and it just... Yeah. And it gets a little bigger in the summer and a little smaller in the winter. Whatever. But it's just a thing that's there. And I had a friend who had one in his neck, and the doctor actually cut it out.
Oh, really?
Because it was like, ugh. It happens. Another thing with age to look forward to. But I remember looking at the doctor just like, I couldn't ask the question. But it was like, I don't have cancer, right? Like, that was what I really needed to know at that moment.
Yeah.
This is not cancer, right? You know, and I didn't even need to. And then she finally was like, oh, no, it's not cancer. I didn't even ask the question. And she was like, oh, God. In the back of her mind, other than thinking about, I know what you look like on the inside, which has got to be a weird, like, mystifying, like, process. You know, because Danielle used to be a bio major. So when we first got the cat, she would always say, you know, I know what that looks like on the inside. You know, but not only do I know what you look like on the inside, I know you're an idiot. All right. Well, speaking of actually cancer.
All right.
Out of all the possible ways to die, what is the way you least want to die?
Ooh.
The least desirable end to Adam Russo.
Oh, man. I think about this a lot, too. Picking just one would be tough.
Okay. Top three, top five, non-hierarchical even. With honorable mentions, if you want.
Yeah, I usually think... This is the kind of stuff that, like, I wake up in the middle of the night, like, and just, like, start freaking out about.
Okay, yeah.
Death doesn't really bother me until some reason I wake up in the middle of the night and I go to take a piss and I'm all like, holy shit, I'm going to be dead someday. Like, how is that going to happen? And then I can't sleep the rest of the night.
Yeah, that happens to me, too.
And the latest thing I was thinking about was being on a cruise ship and being in the back and falling off and nobody sees you and it just sails on and you're just in there in the ocean and that's it. And there's no land.
Yeah.
And then that night, and then later on I had a dream about being on the Titanic. And
But at least then it was cold.
Yeah.
So those people didn't have like 20 minutes.
Yeah.
You're in the water like, you're frozen.
Which would still be awful. But
yes, would be awful, but wouldn't be days.
Yeah. I know. I wonder how long you could survive just floating there, just treading water.
After about 48 hours, you need water. You would need water.
Yeah, but would you just tire out and just?
I mean, I think drown? If you could do a dead man's float, you probably would be okay. I think probably dehydration would get you first.
Yeah,
because eventually you think dehydration, the blood stops working, and so you can't really even dog paddle anymore.
Yeah.
You know, so then do you just kind of dip under, or... Plus, you think, like, the sun would be completely baking your head.
That's true.
The rest of your body would be underwater, but, like, your head would just... Even if you can keep it up there, it would be just blistering.
I guess at that point, you'd probably hope that something would come and eat you.
Yes.
Completely. I also go back and forth about, if you were given the choice of being buried or burned alive, which would you take?
Ooh. Easy, burned.
Really?
Yes, and the reason why, again, the swiftness. Because they say that when you get to a certain point, the nerve endings burn.
Yeah.
So you think about how fast are you burning
until
the nerve endings are gone and you don't people don't feel anything. Yeah. So it's probably like a Zen moment. Well, as opposed to being buried alive, there's asphyxiation. And if you're like in a coffin or in a container or something, then it's how long before the oxygen runs out. You can only think, how long before I run out of air?
Yeah.
Or if you
would you just
being...
slowly slip away in that sense? Like
I think
you air...
would just fall asleep. Yeah. I think
so.
You
know... I mean, other than the panic,
it wouldn't. See, but really that would be, that could be hours of panic. Or,
that's true.
You know, there were those guys. You know, because part of the things that happens when vessels go down, when seafaring vessels go down, you know, there's those chambers that lock up to try to keep some of the ship afloat.
Yeah.
You know, the broken part, oh, that can fill up with water and we'll just be tilty.
Yeah.
And so, but people get caught when that process happens.
Yeah.
People who are below deck get caught. And they either drown or, I know there was a case in Pearl Harbor where there were guys stuck at the bottom of the harbor for 2 weeks. And they couldn't figure, it was in the 40s, they couldn't figure out how to get to them.
Oh,
and they knew that they were alive down there. And how do you get to them?
Yeah. Because
if you just cut a hole,
yeah,
then, you know, exactly. And the pressure, and they're just going to get the bends and whatever. And they couldn't figure out how to do it. And so those, for 2 weeks, those people lived at the bottom of the ocean.
And then
died. Yeah. You know, or you think like miners, you know, with like Q Creek, they got those guys out, or the one in West Virginia where they didn't. You know. Yeah.
And getting back to it, plane crash would be pretty bad too, I think.
Yeah, I think plane crash, because that would be kind of...
It's a similar thing. It's just, you're just sitting there and you just gotta wait for the inevitable.
Yeah. Well, there was that one, that Air France one that went out to South America
that
went in the ocean.
That freaked the hell out of me.
Yeah, and they said, well, some of the people, if they were asleep, they might have never even woken up.
Well, that's the thing, is I don't know if those people actually knew what was happening, because like, they just hit the water flat.
Yeah.
You know, like, they didn't know where they were at in altitude until they just basically slammed into the ocean.
Yeah.
So it's not like they just dropped. I don't think it...
Yeah. And they say if you fall out of the plane, you end up, like, everybody ends up going spread eagle.
Yeah.
Just from the wind pressure. And people would pass out because they wouldn't be able to breathe because of the terminal velocity. And they say, though, if you hit water, you just get shredded into ribbons.
Yeah.
Just ribbons. Like, there's not a whole... There's not big chunks of people left. When that happens.
Yeah. So I guess that's reassuring, right? No?
No, I don't know. That would, again, though, that would be quick.
Yeah.
But it's just the terror that it could happen in any second,
yeah.
I think, is what fucks people up. Though, again, it's... And I grew up, you know, in the 80s, where air disasters happened like every 2 months.
Yeah,
it used to be all the time.
Yeah.
And, you know, now you have engineering and redundancy of engineering and... I used to work for a material science journal. And so, you know, some of the papers were literally, we took this metal to this temperature and we hit it with a hammer and it broke. So if you're going to use that somewhere where it gets hot, don't. And so you think, like, I was thinking about that and I was thinking about the power of engineering every time I would get on a plane, because then, yes, every single piece of this machine has been tested in just about every possible...
Yeah.
Condition. And there's redundancy. There's usually two of everything. So even one can totally fuck up and the other one's fine.
Yeah.
Or at least fine enough that you can get somewhere safe.
That's true.
But there's still that terror, and I think that's part of what we were talking before we started recording about how much I hate air travel. So there's that. But then I think everybody else's reaction to those conditions is just what it just brings out, I think, the absolute worst in humanity.
Yeah.
You know, and it's just, it's more, I think being stabbed in the face is more pleasant than being on an airplane.
Yeah, I can see that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I guess that's one way to look at it, with the redundancies and the, you know, faith in engineering. But then on the other side of that, I think about, you know, our recording rig at our practice space, we have this program called Pro Tools. And I don't know if it's a computer or the system or whatever the hell it is, but almost every single time we go to use it, something inexplicably goes wrong. Like, it just, it malfunctions all the time for no reason, and it does something new every single day. And it's always like Brett or Woody like trying to figure out what the hell is going on with this thing. And then I think this is the same type of thing that's like flying these planes, you know.
Yeah,
just yeah, no reason, just gonna shut off, you know, why not? So
yeah, I had a philosophy professor who once said, you know, we were talking about Berkeley or something and the ideas of probability and are things, you know, is there any chance that the universe is going to keep going, or process philosophy it might have been, I don't remember. But, you know, his line was, after you've lost a master cylinder, you never trust car brakes 100% again.
Okay.
Because the master cylinder is, you know, what powers the hydraulics for the power brakes.
Oh, yeah.
Which every car has power brakes now.
Yeah.
But if that cylinder goes, the brake pedal is just a suggestion. It's not. It doesn't do anything. You can push it all the way to the floor, and you can actually feel it in the brake pedal that you're not pushing against anything. You're just operating. And yeah, and then when that happens, you know, just hit whatever. Or
yeah, that would be pretty terrifying too, I guess.
Yeah, and so he said that happened to him years prior, and yeah,
yeah, never
every red light, stop sign, surprise on the highway was always this moment of, well, is it going to work?
Yeah. Yeah, that's another weird thing, because, you know, of all the ridiculous shit that you think about, like, oh my god, like plane crashes or falling off boats or being set on fire. But like nobody ever really like has a fear of getting in a car, and that's most likely how...
Yeah, well, my mother, but...
Oh, really?
But, yeah, she's very neurotic. And more neurotic than I am, and she actually had a bad car accident. But she's one of those people who has that really toxic mindset, is because it did happen, it will happen.
Oh.
And so, yeah, it was after my dad passed away, she was starting to get out again and do things, and, yeah, some lady just missed the red light, you know, I think she was texting or something, and just ran it and spun my mom around, and, you know, she was fine, she was a little sore, but, yeah, she didn't, you know, get hurt or anything, but she bought a brand new car, and this was 5-6 years ago, and it's not ready for its first oil change yet. Like, it doesn't have 7,000 miles on it. Then she'll call me, speaking of worrying about death, she'll call me, and it's like ninjas that just come out of the bushes. You never know when. And then I'm gonna die, and you're gonna get this, and this. I'm just like, Mom, I don't want to cut the cord and slice the pie. I just, you know, can we go back to talking about the weather, or I'll pretend I care about the Steelers. There's something, you know, just please, can we just not talk about you dying? Just once. And you just never know when it's going to happen. It could be the most pleasant, your cousin decided to go to Robert Morris, and then I'm going to die! You know, and it's like, no, Ma. All right. One more death question, actually.
Oh,
but it's
right.
Not your death this time, and this is question 5. You're almost out of the woods, man. All right. Of the living villains of history, so we're talking villains of history, bad motherfuckers who are still alive, whose obituary would you most like to write? And I'll say, as you think about this, I got this question from Christopher Hitchens in his book Mortality. He said,
one
of the
that.
First things he thought about when he got the diagnosis is, I would not live long enough to see these people's obituaries. Oh, wait, I wanted to write their obituaries, and now I'm not going to be able to. You kind of hope that maybe he's got a couple in the can.
Yeah.
But then again, if he didn't write one for Thatcher.
Yeah.
I was hoping when Thatcher died, I was like, oh, come on. Come on. Vanity Fair's gotta have it. No.
Living villains.
Living villains. Bad people in history whose obituary would give you the most satisfaction or most interesting. So I guess it could be the ghoulish, like, Ding Dong, the witch is dead.
Yeah.
Or it could be, like, wanting to figure out, well, how did this person go so horribly fucking wrong? Or people who are kind of tragic figures who thought they were doing the right thing and then they fucked up. So there's a lot of ways you can go with this question.
Interesting. I think a good one to write would probably be for George W. Bush.
Yeah.
I don't even really, but I think I see him more as like a tragic character than a villain.
Yeah.
You know, he's just, like, in a way, I kind of feel bad for him rather than hate him.
Was that?
Like, I used to hate him.
Yeah, was this before or after the bathtub painting? That you...
I think...
Because that did humanize him for a lot of people.
Yeah, it did. I think I sort of felt this way before that. Did you see that movie W, the Oliver Stone
one? I did not. I didn't.
It wasn't great, but after I saw that, I kind of felt like, you know what? This guy just... He just doesn't know what the fuck he's doing.
Which is funny because, you know, who played W?
Josh Brolin.
Josh Brolin.
Yeah.
Barbara Streisand was really pissed at him for that. Because she's like, you're going to humanize him and then people are going to be sympathetic to this monster. And so maybe she was right.
Yeah.
Yeah. But no, I mean, it's somebody, you know, it is weird to think, you know, the world is complicated and weird and... You know, it gives me topics for podcasts, but then it is this, you know, you go out and you either have to depend on all these things to work for you to survive. And then you have to, you know, we all make decisions. And how many times do we ever make a decision with complete 100% understanding and all the information? And so it's all kind of this.
Pretty much never.
Yeah. And so it's all this kind of weird, mystical leap of faith.
Yeah.
So... I think that's about it. Thanks again, Adam, for being here. And I'll have the CBJ and Triggers links up on the website. And anything else to plug? Or
No, that's...
That's about it. Check the websites for shows and stuffs and downloads and albums and merch and whatever. You people know how to use the internet. Which I always think about that as like in the future, that's how working class couples will argue. Oh, Harold, I know how to use the internet. I know how to use the Google. You know, I know how to use the Google. Don't tell me nothing. You know, it's like the way my parents used to fight about directions, you know.
Yeah.
When we're old and crotchety. I know how to use the Google. All right, so our next episode will eventually happen, and it will be about something. In fact, you might be involved.
Ooh, all right.
Not too long, yeah. Our homepage, where you can find old episodes, new episodes, is GonnaDiePodcast.com. We're also on iTunes. Follow us on Twitter at GonnaDiePodcast.com. And we're all going to die on Facebook and Google Plus, because, you know, that's the future, right? thanks to Brett Zorich, as always, for the lovely theme music. Later meets.